Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a Gundam the 8th MS Team podcast that hopes you get eaten by dogs. I'm you.
I'm Jared.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
And we're here to talk about episode 1 of the 8th MS Team, War for Two. And this is the second time we're recording this because we switched to Skype recording and we didn't realize it only saves those for 30 days.
Harsh, but Skype, harsh.
I feel like... So this is a bit of a rough start to a new series, but we got this.
No, but it's kind of like when you get your new job as the commander of an elite mobile suit unit and you mess up. If I mess up, I mean, you get yourself blown up and you're stuck in space with the enemy.
Well, yeah. Actually, I did get a little extra perspective after watching a few more episodes in and then coming back to this one, because I realized how much this episode, in rewatching it for prep for this, is like that opening RPG trope where you'll be given all of the powers right up front. You're like a really competent dude. You may not even be playing the main character at first. And that's our commander, right? He shows up. He's not even fully equipped. He can still get out there and kick ass. And then as soon as he gets to Earth, everything falls apart. Like, he's been stripped of all of his stats. His main weapon has been taken away from him.
Are you saying he lost his balls?
Yes.
On both accounts? Like, I feel like you're describing the beginning of Final Fantasy, and he's the Black Knight.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very much that trope, right? Because he's super competent in space, but as soon as he gets Earthside, he becomes the bumbling, naive teenager that he is. Although I should mention, I did notice the opening. There's so few posing teens. It's a little weird. I feel after Gundam Wing, I don't know what to do. Everyone's grit and realism. And I mean, I love seeing the classic Zaku coming around, but.
Yeah, it's a lot more gritty. It's a lot more this is Vietnam.
But I feel like this one was more for the people who watched the first one. And now they're older, and so it's way more mature.
I mean...
Yeah, that's fair.
I think a sign of the maturity of this show is
boobies?
There are boobs.
Actually, the boobs aren't quite mature enough, which is part of the problem.
That is also true. But the pervasive sexophone is all over this soundtrack. Like... I feel like I just walked into an offshoot of Red Shoe Diaries. Like,
I assume it's that old man drunk that he's playing that in his off hours.
There's a lot of '90s jazz going on in this thing.
That saxophone is killing it. Like, I was like, bro, are we in a sci-fi movie or did I see Cinemax After Hours? But it was. I forgot, like, because I watched the subtitle the first go round, and so I watched the dub this go round. Wow, like, I would love. I'm gonna have to go back and see if the saxophone is in the subtitled version.
But yeah, it definitely adds. So, should we start off with where this whole episode starts, where our main character is like, hey, I'm going to write to my love about stuff. He's not our main character, but Dear BB.
I feel like this is I want to know how long this gag or bit or whatever they want to call it happens throughout the show. I want to know if it goes through the entire thing, because wait for it. At this point, if that's the case, then every episode we're going to be like, well, gotta change my letter now since
he's never gonna give up hope that his commander has died.
have we seen a leader in anime or movies that people want to die so casually?
Well, to be fair, the leader himself is pretty casual about it. They're coming along in like the worst space tug and they see actual combat troops outside the window and he's like, I'm going to get in this tiny little go boat and go out there and fight. I mean, I would take it hard to take him seriously, too. I'd be like, well, that a-hole just wandered off.
Made.
Yeah, there you go.
I got this. Okay, they've got highly tuned, combat-ready vehicles. And that's a bulldozer, right? That's basically the equivalent of
a ball. Well, they don't. Like, they exist, but they have a ball.
Yeah, which is the equivalent of a bulldozer. Like, it's space construction.
It's like a handyman truck going after an M1 A1. It makes no sense.
But somehow it's able to fire things.
He does is he wraps the Zaku in his tow cable.
Yeah. So it's like Mater going after freaking Lightning McQueen.
And winning. Yeah.
Winning.
Yeah, Larry the Cable Guy beats the crap out of, I don't know, The Rock and wins.
Well, you know, the other guy she was fighting loosened it up for him.
Wait. So what you're saying is the main superstar did most of the damage, and then he got tagged in and felt it from the crowd and just hit his finisher at the last minute. And so
pretty much.
So okay. The silliness of coming at the Zaku with the ball aside, there are some nice notables here, because after coming on a Gundam Wing, where we have a lot of, I don't want to say magical physics, but very loose physics, here we see, you know, directional jets on the ball, and it feels a little bit more spacey in that 60s, you know, Kubrick vibe of what space is supposed to be, which is obviously coming out of the fact that this is out of the 70s original series, like it's the same universe. I also noted that there's cussing in this one, which I don't ever remember seeing previously, certainly not in the 70s version. I don't ever remember in Gundam Wing, but perhaps it happened.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they might have said, like, damn or something like that, but I don't think they like, cursed.
Yeah, Gundam Wing famously had, like, two different dubs, because there was the version that was on in the afternoon and then the version that was on Adult Swim, when Adult Swim was just getting started.
Huh, I didn't realize that.
I wonder who did the two dubs, because it wasn't...
No, I mean they were both Toonami's dubs, but there was like an edit where they said dang and kill, and an episode where they were like darn and destroy.
Oh.
I love that delineation of the two words, where they're like, for kids, I will destroy you. For the adults, I'll kill you next time, gadget. Like,
It's hard for us to complain, though, right? Because we're of the generation where they're like, all right, the Foot Clan is entirely robots, so we can murder millions of them. Like, yeah, it was a fine line there.
Oh, man.
Actually, speaking of throwback cartoons, the episode or the ad bumper has a strong Gem in the Holograms vibe.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Okay, I will say that Ina has a lot. I do agree with you that Ina has a lot of... Gem going on with her.
Brad, from her haircut to
everything.
All she needs is like some big galactic earrings and maybe some like pink eyeliner. She'd be in business.
She's good to go.
A very angular wardrobe.
And a cast board.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the end, actually, Jerrica there does, we do encounter her in space combat.
Yeah, she does pretty well, but it's all off screen for the most part.
Yeah, a lot of implication that she's really good at her job, but not getting to see it.
Like, she destroyed Sander's whole unit except for him, and he's got, like, a torso and an arm left.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I do love the line she gives the guys who come to rescue her, which she's like, they're like, oh, do you see that? She goes, don't worry about it. It's super damaged. It can't do anything. Okay. Like, I don't know, man. He could have got a pot shot in. Like,
he could have.
Yeah.
Like, he might have been on a suicide run.
We're already getting sort of this more, I don't know, mature is the word, but graying of the lines, right? Because immediately the commander essentially rescues her, and then they're hanging out for a while, and they're swapping curios.
This watch.
it is a watch.
It's massive.
Yes.
Was she wearing it around her neck?
No, she had it in the
pocket.
In one of her, like, utility pockets on her suit. But she really does look like she should throw it up into the sky and yell and then have a transformation suit. Mm-hmm. This is a magical girl watch.
As one does.
Dude, it's it you're not wrong, because it's white, has wings. Like, if it had like a little bit of pink and some gold trim, like, it would solidly be, I don't know, the mooned angel watch. Like, I don't know. Like,
I think it was Spence who pointed out the first time we recorded this episode that this really looks like a product for sale. Like, this is your Transformer of the episode. This is something that was being pushed.
This is the Time Turner necklace that they're going to sell in those collectible magazines.
You want to be like Hermione? Well, you can have your Turner too.
Oh, well, I totally have the Ring of Galadriel. So, you know.
Yeah, like there, you can put together Shiro's robot, or you can like collect Ina's watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
and I wonder if, as we see more of her going forward in the series, she's always going to have like a lot more fashion going on with her.
Well, you know, to be fair, man, like, throughout Gundam, and including, you know, Universal Century and then the other one that they're called, I don't know what it's called. They all have stark attire. Like, Gundam Wing had that like Tudors vibe to it at some points, and then it also had like the Nazi kind of like outfits, and you see that prevalent throughout a lot of the Gundam stuff. But then you also have, like, for some reason, man, Gundam loves epaulets, man. Like, everybody's got something dingly dangly on their uniform, dog. Like, and it, so like,
it's just a little odd on this one, because they've already established a lot of these uniforms in the original series, so they're just carrying them through. But then Jerrica shows up, and she's so 80s. Like, she just seems a little bit out of place to me in the rest of the context.
Yeah, I think it's got to be really her haircut. Like, that cut, man. Like, she had, like, she put a hole in the ozone spray in that thing.
So their meet cute is blowing up that Space Hulk that they've sheltered in, so that they can signal to, I guess, their individual troops to come get them.
Because it's like, we're alive.
Don't shoot me. Either, whichever one shows up.
Because a giant explosion totally tells my crew that I'm alive.
Well, maybe she secretly has like a thing. She's like, look, I love blowing things up, guys. So like, if you see a massive explosion and I'm missing, I'm probably the one who did it.
Fair.
Like Lady Un. Like, I love Lady Un loves shooting people and dropping them out of airplanes for no apparent reason.
Yeah, so if Trace ever like sees a bunch of unexplained murders, he knows, oh, I have to go pick up Lady Un.
Yeah. she's stuck at the grocery store getting me more rose scented bath oils. Darn, she said she couldn't get another Uber. I've got to go out here. Gosh. Ugh. Oh, man, I wish I could. Oh, man. What's that guy's name who died because he didn't have enough machismo?
Otto?
Yeah. Darn it. If Otto had more machismo, he could have went and picked her up.
Well, you know, everyone has their love language, and Lady Un's is murder.
Yes.
So I'm assuming our main character, like, he is the most nonchalant. Like, he had the most life-threatening situation ever. Like, he's lost in space, basically, with a woman who has a punctured suit and running out of oxygen. And the first thing he does when he gets back is not like, oh, thank God, I'm alive. But no, it was all right, nap time.
Okay, to be fair, that would be my first thing too.
But I do like that he takes the nap clutching the watch to his chest.
I also like the use of duct tape in this whole thing, because to fix the holes in the suit, they found duct tape somewhere.
He had duct tape in his belt.
Yeah.
You know what?
So her personal item was her watch. His was duct tape. Loves duct tape.
He was basically driving a space handyman truck, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, he could have had it in there. I mean, again, I think we made this joke the first episode, but it could have been a wrench.
Yeah,
he could have wrenched it closed. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So as he's napping, though, we get the touching but inexplicable scene where they salute his sleeping self, which is a little bit, oh, okay, I guess so. And then I guess the letter to BB gets adjusted and we're done.
Yep. Well, that's the first episode. Well, we do have a brief segment on Earth.
Yeah.
Where we meet the rest of the crew, who will show up in later episodes, and Karen does try and murder Elidor with a wrench because he's listening to music.
Yeah. See, but okay, so you all from the first episode, the first time we tried to record this, missed that the whole time I'm calling Elidor Metalhead because he's totally jamming out to like whatever metal was available at that time. And yeah, Metalhead and Wrench Girl.
Yeah.
And also drunken 1890s prospector who's there.
The inexplicable old man.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's funny, right? Like, this show kind of has like a Lethal Weapon or like that buddy cop feel, but it's like the whole crew, right? Like, you got your resident old guy, you got the nerdy dude, you got the lady, you know, the tough lady, you know, you've got the wimpy guy who's always like talking about the baby, you know, or his wife back at home and all this good stuff. Like, I just need one line about the old dude on the team talking about he's too old for this, and it's
kind of real, like, and Easy then you get Company Bingo vibe to it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So now I wonder if they're going to dress one of them in drag and try to get him out of fighting the war. Leave him there.
I want a clinger now.
Yeah, this show needs a clinger. Agreed.
You need a clinger, and Elidor is no radar. He is not.
No.
He falls very, very short of the status that radar is.
As you will hear in a couple of episodes, when I rail on Elidor for being a terrible communications officer or whatever the hell he is.
He's a guy in a truck. It's fine.
It's a hover tank.
Yeah, hover tank.
He's listening to the CV, just nah.
You know, but I feel like that's how, like, you know, it'd be different if they said, like, if they had made a note, like, at the beginning of the show that, like, conflict had, like, ceased and hadn't had any, you know, any skirmishes or anything like that for months on end or whatever, then that would explain his just nonchalant, like, chilling attitude in this, you know, satellite truck. But, like, it seems like they're constantly fighting. Like, it's either you're fighting against Zeon's people or you're fighting against the rebels. And it just seems like there's a lot of conflict going on. But he's just like, meh.
Well, I think it's a bit of a Vietnam trope that they've incorporated into the show. But one of the things that really underlines a lot of those Vietnam tropes and sort of sources them that doesn't make it over is the drug use, right? Like, there's always this implication of the metalhead. You kind of picture, like, he kind of is Charlie Sheen from Platoon a little bit. Like, he should be super stoned and like, yeah, whatever, it's fine, man.
So can we make another like Full Metal Jacket? Like, who's Pyle?
Well, Pyle doesn't make it into combat, right? So we missed that part.
Oh, yeah, touche. You're correct. Spoilers for that movie that's like,
yeah, spoilers for a 70s Kubrick film. So this does bring me to my favorite moment, though, because it is the consistency of the series. And now I think we had a discussion last time that it's not necessarily always the case, but it did feel homey to me to come to the end of this episode and see another ridiculous home movie. It isn't Relena, you know, gallivanting with rhinos.
No, it's somebody stalking the new commander. And just like watching him, and everybody else knows that he's there.
I'm trying to think if other Gundam shows have weird endings, and I would probably be remiss if I said no, they do not have weird endings. I bet this is like just throughout the whole series. It doesn't matter. Like, this is like weird non sequitur stuff.
Don't particularly remember any weird endings in other Gundams, but when we get there, we'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. Fair.
I wouldn't put it past.
Relena went on safari. How is that not weird?
No, I mean, aside from Gundam Wing and 8th MS team, like, I can't even remember what the closing is. Like, the closing's kind of normal for G Gundam.
Well, yeah, because the rest of the show
for G Gundam.
Yeah, because the rest of the show is insane. But to be fair, Relena's safari wasn't normal. Do you see how big those animals were? Like, in comparison to her, she was like 3 feet tall. Like, they were massive animals.
I wonder if this is an ongoing thing, but the part of the problem is it's so unrelated to anything else that happens in the show in both cases that it's really hard to remember, right? Like, You would not just sit there and go, oh yeah, the safari. It was so essential to the plot that how could I forget? But no, like there's actually no time during the show in which Relena could have possibly taken off on safari. So why are we even watching this? I have this theory now that that closing sequence is actually the dying thoughts of Riker Dad. Like these are the last moments. He's just his mind has gone to this weird thing him and his daughter did when they were young, and that's it.
He's remembering taking her to the zoo.
Yeah.
Okay.
The ending for G Gundam is just that weird, like, single frozen shot of Rain's face in the snow for no reason that, like, endlessly zooms in on itself. Gundam endings are weird, let's face it. Let's call it now.
Now, I feel like, Jared, you'd be sad about this because we didn't have Voltron guy. We didn't have over narration guy.
Yeah, I think that part of that is probably the tightness of how many episodes we've got here. We've only got like 13 episodes or something to the entire series. So I don't think they've got a lot of time to reiterate anything. I don't think they got a lot of time for lead in. It's mostly just go.
Yeah. So to be fair, I think my favorite part of this was the changing of the letter to BB, because like it was so cash. Like, I'm like, how many commanders have you wished death upon? Like,
well, if you remember though, even when Shiro comes forward and is like, I'm going out there to fight this guy in a ridiculous utility truck, the co-pilot basically just shrugs. He's like, yeah, whatever, man.
All right, like, man. Fine.
So yeah, it totally the casual death wished to BB every episode. Well, Commander's doomed this time.
Like, I feel like that co-pilot should have been like, look, do whatever you want, dude. I'm here just so I don't get fined. Like, like it just again, like I don't know, like it'd be different if it was like it wasn't even in a heroic way. Like it wasn't like a grandiose battle where he could have like ran out there and like turn the tide of the battle. Like, no, it was just a skirmish with like one Zaku, dog. Like, you telling me like I couldn't just like, I don't know, warp away from that thing? I don't know if it's warping Gundam, but like put the boosters on and just fly away. This is like the equivalent of like one fighter plane trying to take out like a fully armed like destroyer, or better yet, trying to chase down like a cruiser or something. Like you know, the Starship Enterprise being chased down by like one shuttlecraft. Like, no, man, we're just gonna put shields up. We're gonna warp away. Like,
yeah. Like, well, this is what I'm saying though. This is the RPG trope. We really need to establish him as hyper competent before we strip all of his stats and make him useless.
Yeah, and sadly, I don't think there's any new type references throughout this show, as far as I can remember from when I first watched. So sadly, that's probably the closest we're going to get to like that RPG shonen trope. Like, because at least with the new types, like they literally had the shonen type of thing where these new types had abilities, so to speak. Like they had better abilities and stuff like that. Like, but this guy, no, he's just that good.
Well, I'm kind of okay with that. Like, the new types kind of bug me. That seems like, I don't know, just a magical trope to explain why one guy can murder 50 dudes. And part of what I like about this is that it's much more granular and it's just normal people trying to achieve something in a war, even if there is, you know, some magical thinking involved.
Yeah, and to be fair, like you guys said earlier, like, this the fighting in this, like the combat is very down to earth. It's not like Gundam Wing. There's not, you know, there's no guy with a beam death scythe slicing through six dudes in one pass, you know. Like, this literally looks like one-on-one combat, maybe two-on-one. And if it is two-on-one or whatever, that person who's outnumbered is in trouble. Like, literally will have to do something to turn the tide in his favor, which is something that I don't think we ever feel tension about any combat that was in Gundam Wing. Like, I don't think anybody ever thought after a fight, like, oh man, I don't think Hero's gonna make it out of here. Oh god. Like, no, I don't think anybody ever questioned if any of the main characters were ever gonna make it to the end of the show. I mean, to be fair, they resurrected one.
Yes. Like, several times. Like,
yeah. Hero should have been dead a few times, and it was just basically a wrench that kept him alive. But anyway. Yeah,
it's like, oh, you've been asleep for a month in this circus wagon.
That's how brain trauma works.
We call, you know, I think in civilian life, they call that a coma. No. He was just exhausted. Don't worry, wrong. We cuddled him up with his wrench, and he was fine.
Like, he was staring blankly in at the sky in a puddle of his own blood, and there was a lot of it. And
after he
wrench,
was
fine.
Yeah, after he self-destructed his Gundam.
Yeah, but this was just to have a little bit of fun in it. My favorite part was definitely Sanders, like, getting refitted so he could go out and find Shiro after Shiro went out to save him. And the whole crew's like, oh, we're still working on it. We're going to reload the gun. Just be patient. And then the kid's like, oh, you know, he's dead anyway. And then Sanders just kind of like throws him across the room because zero gravity.
Is that like the only time we've seen functioning and accurate depictions of zero G?
Like, I think the zero G on the wrecked ship is very good. Like, we can see like the pressure move. You've got like people floating in zero G with like blown out face plates.
Explosive.
It doesn't like dwell on them, but there are some really nice shots in how that all works.
Like, they depicted the explosive decompression of how, you know, fighting in space would be. Because wait for it, you wouldn't have to necessarily kill your enemy. Like, if you could put a hole in their ship, that's devastating. Like, and the bigger the hole, the better. Like,
although in Gundam Wing, not so much, because you can just mash two ships together and then start fighting across them, right? That's how that works. Mm-hmm.
And they change size based on the perspective of the ship.
Yeah, Gundam Wing is a lot more action movie rules than real robots rules.
Yeah, like it's I was going back and because of quarantine and all that good stuff, I was actually going back and listening to Paul Cooley's not the black, but the derelict. And he talks about in that where these space marines use flechette rounds. So they're not trying to like shoot their enemy. They're literally just trying to tear their enemy's spacesuit because being exposed to the vacuum of space is what? Fatal, basically.
Yeah.
So I think that it just, I like those little tweaks when it comes to like universes and stuff of this nature, and them being pressed by, you know, decompression and her torn suit in that segment on the ship is really, really good. And the, like you said, those images of the explosive decompression and stuff like that, which, because wait for it, that spaceship is basically intact. What basically killed everybody was a big explosion made a hole and they died.
Yep.
Space
holes. Look out.
It's like Canada. It's very, very big.
What about you, Spence? What was your favorite moment of the episode?
Duct tape. Shiro, like, is a freaking Boy Scout and he has duct tape.
I do like when we do that whole sequence, like Ina's like just glaring daggers at him for like a minute. Like, and then
she thinks that he's going to take advantage of her. And I'm like, you are in the vacuum of space. You cannot take your suit off. You will die. You're fine.
Well, even when he gets close to her, she's like, nope, I don't want to be captured. Just kill me. Yeah. It's fine.
Let's do this.
I mean, I guess it's her dedication to Zeon or whatever. But
well, I assumed it was one of those, you know, the other side is always awful kind of, oh, maybe it's not as bad as we thought situations. You know, they eat babies.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny, right? Like, how many of you guys have seen Shin Godzilla?
I have.
I would love to see a Gundam of that nature where we see the behind the scenes of like the propaganda and how they explain the cost and the utility of these giant robots to fight these wars versus from the perspective of the people in the war, right? Like, because Shin Godzilla is basically taking the perspective of Godzilla, but from a governmental standpoint. So you basically have this force of nature that you cannot stop, that you need to figure out how to either delay, slow down, or figure out some way to mitigate the destruction. And they go through all the bureaucracy and everything. I've never watched something that was so focused on just signing paperwork and calling people that I enjoyed so much.
We almost had that in Gundam Wing with Inspector Acht, and then they killed him three episodes in. So there you go.
I feel like Inspector Acht is like your favorite character. He was only like, what, two episodes?
But he was like, there's some cost overruns here. We need to get down to the budget line on what's going on here.
Yeah, so he had to die for that. Quit asking questions about how we're going to pay for these infinite robot wars. Oh, man.
Indeed. So, yes, thank you for joining us. And be here next week when we'll be watching episode 2 of 8th MS Team.
Where it just gets creepier.
Yeah, that's Gundams in the jungle, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Gundams in the jungle. You can find all of my stuff over at HughJOdonnell.com.
You can find all mine over at Skinner.fm.
Find me at NerdsWithVoices.com.
And find me at ResonantMoon.com. Yeah.
Thank you, and until next week, you know he's already dead, right?
Oh, gotta change my letter.
Are you having trouble keeping up with the ebbs and flows of modern geekery? Is the real world holding you back from knowing what is happening in the geeky world? To answer these and other personal problems brought in by your friends, gaming group, and loved ones, Geek Radio Daily presents daily informational sessions brought to you by the wonderful Billy Flynn, the Flynnstress, and podcasting's Rich Siegfried. They contain such helpful segments as history, geek birthdays, box office results, the latest in DVD and Blu-ray, video game and comic releases. Why, they also have a weekly show hosted by the wonderful Billy Flynn and the Flynnstress, which includes interviews and commentary. And to make sure you are informed, Geek Radio Daily also provides you with your daily dose of geek news to make sure you know more than that jerk know-it-all Steve. Visit us at geekradiodaily.com. That's right, Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the weight. Now available in fine Corinthian leather.